Welcome back in, hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions, right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. Going to be joined by Preds head coach John Hines coming up at 7:30. The Preds back in action tonight, taking on the Winnipeg Jets at Bridgestone Arena. They'll try to stop a four-game losing skid that they're on, try to get back in the win column coming up later tonight at Bridgestone Arena. Right now, looking ahead to the Titans and the Bengals, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Henry texting in says, I don't know how many times this has already been said, but the defense really has to show up for the Titans because I don't think Tannehill can win a shootout with Joe Burrow. Make no mistake, I love Tannehill just as much as anyone. I just don't think he's a shootout type of quarterback. It's coming from Henry on the text line. Well, it's funny because last year he kind of was a shootout type quarterback. They had to win a lot of shootouts last year. It's been a bit of a different year this year with the injuries and everything that's happened. But, you know, obviously I think in a perfect world, if you're the Titans, you'd rather not get into like a 41-38 type game and with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase going nuts out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about the Titans is that, you know, going into the year, it was kind of like, and I still think there's a lot of truth to it, but the idea was, you know, they could win any kind of game, you know. You want to now, well, I shouldn't say going into the year. We didn't know that about the defense. You know, but last year, that's exactly right. Last year, it was like, well, basically the offense could do whatever it wanted to do, including Tannehill. What was he, 33 TDs, 5 picks? You know, and he had a lot of big weeks throwing the ball, and he had to have a lot of big weeks throwing the ball. You know, so people forget that. It was just last year. I mean, go back to even the clincher. I mean, it takes Tannehill stepping back and perfectly connecting on a bomb with A.J. Brown, you know, after the Texans and Deshaun Watson had tied it up to win the division. I mean, he had a lot of games like that. So, yeah, I disagree with that. It hasn't looked like it this year. And the Titans don't want to find out. You know, they don't want to find out in this game if Tannehill can throw for 350 and 4 touchdowns and keep them in a game. They want their defense to play like it has most of the year.
Jeff on the text line says, 28-23 Bengals, the final. Henry's around 75 yards. It comes down to the best quarterback here, and there's really no comparison. It's coming from Jeff in Lebanon. So no comparison between Joe Burrow and Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah. Now, look, I think Joe Burrow is better. There's another argument I had yesterday with Jared and Caroline. Of course, let's remember Caroline, LSU grad, that Caroline is. A unadmitted Joe Burrow stan. They put Burrow in the top tier with Rodgers and, you know, and Mahomes, those guys. Yeah, I'd put him – look, I think he's going to be great, without question. He has thrown 14 picks this year. He's been sacked 51 times. Again, being sacked that many times is mostly not a reflection on him, but I'm just saying, like, it's, you know, it's still not all the way there yet. They give him an offensive line moving forward. Watch out. He's going to be great. I don't know that he's quite there yet, but again, if we're just boiling this game down to the two quarterbacks, well, then I would agree that Joe Burrow is better.
Yeah.
And now let's go back through the history of the NFL playoffs and show me how every single game has been decided by who's a better quarterback. I'll show you hundreds that weren't.
Well, let me tell you, if that was how every game was decided, Aaron Rodgers have a lot more Super Bowls at this point.
Exactly.
He really would.
Exactly. Right. I mean, I know it's we want to simplify it like that. I get it. And it is the most important position. I mean, no one's arguing that, but it's just not that simple.
I mean, look, I don't think there's any doubt Tannehill's going to have to make some plays on Saturday. I think he's going to have to make some big-time throws. Like, I like the Titans' defense. I think they're going to be able to get after Joe Burrow a little bit in this game. I still think Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and, you know, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, I think they're going to make some big plays in this game too. So, like, to me, if you're the Titans, you might have to get into the high 20s, low 30s in order to win this game. And to me, if you're going to do that, Tannehill's going to have to be a big part of it. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that Tannehill doesn't have to be really good on Saturday for them to win the game. You know, turning the ball over, that's the main thing. Like, hold on to the ball. Don't give it to the other team. But he's going to have to make some big throws. I don't think there's any question about it. We've talked about it all week. The pressure is on him to be able to step up when the moments matter the most and make those throws. And sometimes we've seen him do that. Sometimes we have not. And now is another chance for him to continue to write his legacy here as quarterback of the Titans.
Yeah, no question. I mean, Ryan Tannehill is going to be very, very important. And there's going to be some moments that are going to come down to him. But, you know, if Joe Burrow, like Joe Burrow can throw for 320 and three touchdowns, and Tannehill can throw for 220 and a touchdown, and Tannehill's team can win by double digits.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've seen that play out time and time again as well. So that's certainly on the table for sure. You talked about the coordinators a little bit earlier, and obviously, you know, lots of pressure on Todd Downing heading into this game. Remember our conversations before the season and what those conversations look like with Shane Bowen and this defense of, all right, Shane Bowen's been named defensive coordinator. He has the title that we've all wanted him to have. We'll see how he deals with it and how he responds to it. And I think, really, for the most part, this Titans defense has been better than I ever thought it would be or could be this year. So the question is, if the Titans go through a nice run here, could Shane Bowen get into the mix to some head coaching positions around the NFL? Can you imagine us asking that question last year?
No, not at all. I've been looking back at last year and like a lot of stuff I wrote and just a lot of the circumstances of games and everything. And because as you'll be shocked to know, I wrote a big piece about Shane Bowen today for TheAthletic.com. Yes. How about that? I just tweeted it out too. One of the things in there was, you know, one of his mentors, Brian Bohannon, who was Kennesaw State's head coach, who gave him his first full-time job. You know, he's like, yeah, watch these lists. You know, you watch. And he's going to be on these lists. I mean, 9 years ago, he was a grad who was happy to get a $40,000 a year, you know, job at Kennesaw State, helping them start a program. And I think, you know, right now I'm not seeing a lot of Shane Bowen. I have seen a little bit of Todd Downing. And I think, you know, for the most part, most teams are still like, who's the next offensive mind, right?
Yeah.
Like it's, I think there's still more, but I mean, Mike Vrabel's an example of it can work out to have a defensive coach as your head coach. There's plenty of other coaches in this league who are like that too. Belichick, Tomlin among them. And you know, if the Titans have a great playoff run here defensively, and they play multiple games and their defense is great, they come out there and sack Joe Burrow six times and hold the Bengals to 20 points. And Shane Bowen's his name will start popping up. It's just how it is. Vrabel's already, of course, lost, you know, two OCs in his first three seasons of being a head coach. Three seasons of being a head coach, and he already lost, you know, two OCs. But I think, you know, Bowen is a young guy, 35 years old, and you have to be impressed with what he's done this year. You have to. And a lot of it is personnel. I think we can look back last year and say, okay, Bowen didn't look so great last year. So let's see. Vic Beasley's out there, and Clowney's out there, and Jonathan Joseph's out there.
Hey, Clowney had nine sacks this year.
Well, that's true. Maybe it's Bowen's fault that Clowney didn't have an avalanche of sacks last year. So I mean, personnel is players. You know, it's a huge part of it. But I think one, you have to look at Vrabel and say, okay, he kind of knows what he's doing. Is when he stuck with Bowen, there was a lot of people upset. We talked about that a ton, right? Also, I think it's fair to still look back and say, so this is why you don't have an in-between year. With a sort of DC, you know, go ahead. Now, if Bowen was the full on DC last year, would that have made a huge difference? I don't know. Probably not. But I still think he's been empowered by being the DC, being able to go to all the guys. That's one thing he told me for this story is, you know, now I can go hang out with the inside linebackers. Now I can go hang out with the defensive backs. When you're coaching outside linebackers, along with being the DC, well, you still have all those duties, and so you're around those guys all the time, and you're around the D-line a fair amount because the way they do things, but there's a big difference in how well you know those guys versus how well you know these other guys, and you're trying to coordinate the whole thing. This year, it has worked out really well, and I think Shane is a very respected coach in the building. A lot of people are happy for him. A lot of people are coming at me and probably other reporters saying, hey, what were you guys saying a year ago about Shane? I've heard a little bit of that this year too, which is fair.
Yeah. Hey, he's done a remarkable job this year, and certainly the personnel is different, but you can't argue with the results of the Titans defense that we've seen so far this year. We'll continue the conversation on Shane Bowen and the Titans defense coming up on the other side. Got more of your thoughts to get to on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Make sure you're tuning in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a pair of tickets to a future Preds home game brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll have that opportunity coming up later today at 8:45. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Thursday morning. Looking ahead to the Titans and the Bengals. Welcoming your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Talking Shane Bowen and this Titans defense, and I love this question on the text line. Got a texture that says, how much of it is Jim Schwartz? It's on the text line. Yes. We cannot escape Jim Schwartz here on the program.
Boom. Yeah, and that's addressed in my piece, by the way. And I did ask around on that. And I know Paul Carsey's been asking around on that, and it's a totally understandable thing to ask. And look, every time Shane Bowen has been asked about Jim Schwartz, he's absolutely been an asset. I mean, to paraphrase his answer that he's probably been asked, I don't know how many times, several times, to paraphrase, yeah, I mean, he's been a help. I know Vrabel got a little testy when Kaharski asked him about Schwartz. I guess it was it last week, 2 weeks ago? But
last week.
Here's the thing with Jim Schwartz that I can say with asking around people, what I got back was don't overrate it. You know, don't overblow what it means. What I can tell you just from personal experience is, like, if you aren't engaged actively in what's going on in the practice field, I mean, that's a huge part of this job. I mean, a huge part of all of this coming together. It's still coaching a sport, right? I mean, you're on the field with the players. You're taking the classroom to the grass. You know, you're working on these things together on the field. Shane Bowen, when he wants to get after it, he gets after it. If Shane Bowen is a laid-back guy and all that, kind of easy going, but boy, when he turns it on, he can flip that that voice in the practice field. Not quite Vrabel levels, you know, but he can be intense. You know, Schwartz is an observer in those situations. So that right there tells you, I mean, there's limitations here. I mean, look, we talked about it, and I think we kind of dunked on it then too. But no, we talked about it. If this defense stinks this year, how long will it be before fans are clamoring for Schwartz to take over? And when they brought him in, how many people were like, oh, I see, Jim Schwartz is just going to come in and take over as DC. What did Schwartz – I mean, Schwartz hasn't really talked, but the word coming from the Schwartz camp was actually – he wants to stay involved in the game, but he doesn't want to be the full-on D coordinator somewhere. He doesn't want to be a head coach right now. He's kind of in between. And that's what it is. He's a senior advisor. He, I'm sure, has had some impact. I'm sure he's had some, you know, obviously the Schwartz wide nine stuff. I mean, like the Titans have looked like that at times. I'm sure he's had some input that has helped them with the pass rush. He's been a great D coordinator in the league. But yeah, don't overrate it. It's not. It's what they said it is. Sometimes that's spin, and in reality, there is a coup afoot or whatever. But that's not what this was.
Well, the bottom line in this discussion for me is, you know, we talked so much last year about Shane Bowen and the defensive side of things, and I think he deserves a lot of credit this year. I don't want to take any of that away from him, and I'm not going to, because I think he's done a really good job. But it's amazing how much better you look as a defensive coordinator and how much better you look as a defense when you can generate some pressure on the quarterback. I mean, we talked about that all year long last year of, like, how much of a chance do you really have as a defensive coordinator? Or for that matter, I mean, throw Kevin Byard in this conversation. We were talking so much about Kevin Byard last year and how we were like, man, like, what's going on with Kevin Byard out there? Well, if you cannot breathe on a quarterback as a defense and he's got all day to sit back there and throw, it's pretty amazing how much of a difference it makes when you've got Jeffrey Simmons and Danico Autry and Harold Landry and Bud Dupree just wreaking havoc up there and getting after the quarterback all the time. So, you know, we can talk about the change in title, and I think it's important. There's a lot of factors that go into this, but to me, the number one factor is now this Titans defense can get after the quarterback. The personnel has what it takes to do that, and that makes a whale of a difference with this group.
No doubt. Now, and you know, I think I mean, there's no question. I mean, you can pressure the quarterback, and your secondary looks so much better. And then you know, the other, it's a sliding scale. I do think that also there's, I mean, it's funny because you know, last year after the Cincinnati game, that was the famous quote from Byard, which was, you know, it's just not coordinated. And then of course everybody's like, well, oh, you know. And that was the game. I mean, after that game, I asked Vrabel about Shane. Like, do you feel like this has been the issue? And Vrabel said, no, I don't think this is the issue. But coordination, it's also coordinating rush and coverage together, timing with that. And so it's not just like have a good rush and then you're better off. There's also certain things you do from a coverage perspective that if it works all in tandem, you know, then you take away the space and time to a maximum, to your maximum ability. And I think the Titans, they've looked like a more coordinated defense this year. Again, to your point, some of it is because this guy just beat his block instantly, and now Danico Autry is in the backfield. You know, some of it is just that. It's just, can somebody make a play? Can Jeffrey Simmons, you know, throw an offensive guard into the lap of a quarterback? But I do think they look like a more streamlined unit. And one thing that Bowen talked about here, and it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense if you think about it. He said, like, last year he was trying to he wanted protections on everything, you know, like, okay, but then if they do this, now, guys, we got to do this. Now, but if they do this, then plan C, we do this. And, yep. And this year he was sort of like, If you have that much stuff swimming inside the heads of your players, at some point you're bogging them down. So there was some simplifying too. So it's just like, okay, it's more like, okay, here's a plan B. We don't need a plan C and a plan D. Here's a plan B. And you know what? If they do something wacky, then by golly, then sometimes you get beat. But so I think that sounds like a coordinator getting more experienced and kind of figuring out how much you can put on your players for a Sunday so that they can play fast and loose. And they, you know, so I think it does start with players, but I think that there was some soul searching and some self analysis on the coaching side too, that has led to this success.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com 615-737-1025. Jim texting in says, Schwartz has to be an observer. You have to make sure that Shane Bowen is the man the players hear and see. He's doing it the right way. This coming from Jim on the text line. No word as to whether or not this is Jim Schwartz on the text line.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, yeah, it's the, you know, it's Bowen's defense. He's the coordinator. It's not, you know, this isn't like a co-DC situation. Now, Byer did talk, Schwartz recommended a book on leadership that he read. So, I mean, he talks to people. You know, I mean, look, it's great to have a Jim Schwartz in your building if you can pull this off, right? Talking about a guy, sure. I always thought Schwartz actually did a okay job with the Lions. He just was coaching the Lions.
Yeah, I mean, about fought Jim Harbaugh at midfield. It was awesome.
He did, and Harbaugh deserved a bit of a beating too. It's a great asset. It's a great resource, you know. And I understand how it looked at the time, because there was so much understandable anger with, wait a minute, you're sticking with Bowen. If the defense was bad and he was technically the D coordinator, then I understand why people were not happy with the decision to stick with him. But I do think that now that we're here, yeah, and we said this at the time too, it's like, you know, we're not there every day. I mean, Vrabel has known this guy since he was a grad for him at Ohio State. So that's going back 10 years. And he pulled him out of college to come with him to the Texans. And then he brought him here to Nashville to be a full-time outside linebackers coach. And then he elevated him. So I'm thinking that Vrabel has a pretty good, amount of information to have confidence in him as a coach.
Chrissy on Twitch says, my thought is a close defensive game. Titans minus the 3.5. Can't wait. So everybody talking about shootouts. Chrissy says this one's going to be a bit of a defensive struggle coming up on Saturday.
Crazier things have happened. How many times have we expected one or the other, then the opposite happened? But yep. I don't think you're going to be right.
You going 41-38 final score either way?
No, but I think something like 31-27 kind of thing.
Okay.
You know, somewhere in there. 30-26, 28-24, more in that range would be my guess.
Jim texting back in on the text line says, I'm not Jim Schwartz, but let the Schwartz be with you. Yes.
Yes.
Give me more Spaceballs references. I'm here for it.
Yes.
One time I did an entire Preds game worth of tweets and nothing but Spaceballs gifts. It may be, to this day, the greatest professional accomplishment I've ever had.
Wow.
Amen.
I'm sad I missed that.
Yeah. Might bring it back pretty soon.
That's good. That should be your thing. I mean, Vingan has his Simpsons gifts and Jim Diamond has his haikus. That should be your thing. You should just do Spaceballs for the Preds games. I like it.
We'll see what I can do. Speaking of the Nashville Predators, they're in action tonight against the Winnipeg Jets. We'll come back. We'll be joined by Preds head coach John Hines. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Our 102.5 The Game Preds Game Day broadcast brought to you by Hermitage Design Center, the professional source for lighting, hardware, appliance, custom kitchens, and baths. Also on the web at GoHermitage.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. We are scheduled to be joined shortly by Preds head coach John Hines. So looking forward to that conversation. Joe, the Preds right now in a little bit of a rut. They've lost four games in a row. Big divisional game tonight taking on the Winnipeg Jets. I think it's really important to get a win tonight. You need to get out of the doldrums that you're in right now, get back on the winning side of things tonight if you're the Preds.
Yeah, and it only takes a week sometimes in this league to be on a four-game losing streak. That's what it is. It's a bad week, you know. With different things that have popped up as issues, and you did get a point in Boston, but I would agree. You want to the Vancouver game felt important to do this the other night, and it didn't happen. It's a one-all game going to the third, and it just seems like when things are going well and you're rolling, you know, you find a way to get that tiebreaker in the third period, and when you start going the other way. You know, I don't know if it's like an overall confidence or what, but, you know, they could use a boost and a win.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in Predators head coach John Hines. John, what's going on, man? How's it going?
It's going great. How about you guys?
We are great. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. So, John, we were just talking about obviously the results have not gone your way in the last four games. What are you seeing from your group out there right now, and what do you want to improve on tonight as you take on the Jets?
You know, I think that out of the four games, they've been a little bit different. I think our game against Buffalo was not the identity we want to be able to play with, really, in any regard. We got outplayed competitively, which has kind of been our calling card. I think our details and our execution with and without the puck wasn't what it needed to be. I thought in the Boston and the St. Louis games, those were two big, heavy, hard games, played much more to our identity. I think both teams after the game, you know, both of them said they were really, really hard physical games. I think, you know, each team brought it the way they wanted to. So I liked those components of our game from a competitive standpoint. I felt in the Boston-St. Louis game, we gave up easy offense. Like, some of our details without the puck right now are not what they need to be because we're right in games. And we're competitively there. We're pushing offensively. So that part of our game is good, but then we're giving up odd man rushes, we're giving up easy goals, and that's not a recipe for success. Then I thought in the Vancouver game, I thought our first period was pretty good. Second period, we didn't defend hard enough in our own zone, which is why we had those long extended shifts, and then we gave up an easy line change goal, we didn't find a way to win that game. So our message to our players is that you have to give yourself a chance to win every night with how you compete and how you work. If you don't have that, I think as we've seen with this team and probably any team. You don't give yourself a chance to win every night. So I feel like that's there. But I think our details in our game have to be cleaned up without the puck. How we check and how we defend and our awareness has to pick up and get better. And if we do that, we'll be in good shape.
How much harder is it, John, to refine those details when you have lineup shuffling going on?
It's not, it's not a, it shouldn't be the way it is right now. I don't think that that's really an excuse. I mean, all the guys that are in the lineup have been here. They've been in the organization. They've been in training camp. We play the same way. The system in Milwaukee is the same as it is in Nashville for those reasons. So we've got to be mentally sharper in those areas of the ice, regardless of who's in the lineup, because the systems don't change. And, we've got to bring it to their attention. And there are some areas we're certainly going to address this morning with the guys. And I think we'll be better in those areas. But to be honest, Joe, I don't think that the lineup shuffling has a ton to do with it. It just comes down to coaching and the performance of the players. Got to be better.
Well, John, to that point, I mean, it's an 82-game season. Stretches like this are bound to happen with every team throughout the league at different points throughout the year. What's kind of the challenge for you and your staff of navigating your group through times like this? What kind of goes into that?
Well, it's trying to be consistent. And as you said, I mean, we were going really good for a while, and the train was on the tracks, and everything was dialed in. And when you're going through those stages, you're looking at your team, okay, how do we continue to get better through winning? How can we stay hungry and continue to improve our game and do different things that way, which is a challenge. Now you are going to hit adversity. And, to be honest with you, it's important we do go through some stages like this over the course of 82 games, because it's nice. Sometimes you get humbled pretty quick in this league. And I think it's important to understand that, how you work and the identity you play with and the mental preparation and the ability to check without the puck. As the season goes on, the league gets harder and harder to play against. Teams tighten it up. Teams play harder. Playoff race starts. So I think it's important for us to take some lessons that we're getting taught right now, that you can't just come out and play. You got to compete at a high level every night. And the attention to detail lots of times is what's going to be a difference in games. And when you play loose without the puck, or you take some chances that are kind of high risk, lots of times you leave the game to chance. And I think when we were playing our best hockey, we were buttoned up on both sides of the puck, offensively and defensively. Right now, we've got to be a little bit better from a defensive perspective.
You mentioned, John, that the Buffalo game, that from a compete level, that wasn't what you want. I'm just wondering, do you think that is because it was right after this huge win you guys had over Colorado? And then also, how many times this year have you felt that about this team? How many games have you come out of this year and said, okay, that's not our compete level?
Not many. And I do think, Joe, that part of it was, I talked about it, I think after the game, was that the challenge was going to be was coming off the long road trip and then playing Colorado, and we were jacked up for Colorado, and it was a hyped up game. And that's an external motivator. Like, that's you know that you're going to be there for that game. But coming off of that win and then coming in against Buffalo, and as we know, anyone can beat anyone on any given night, but there wasn't as much mental focus and competitiveness that we had for the Buffalo game. So we didn't respond well from a big win, big emotional win, to coming in to getting right back to business against a game that isn't as hyped up as the Colorado game. So that was one situation. I'm sure we're going to be in that again, where we play a rival team, and then maybe we don't play a rival team and the game's not as hyped up, that we've got to not get too high after that win and make sure we're ready to go the next night. But I don't think that there's many nights where we haven't liked our competitiveness from start to finish. Now, some games it's been start to finish. Other games we may be a period or some lulls in the game. But I felt like the Buffalo game, really from start to finish, we never really had a strong push or ever really controlled the game the way that we want to control it.
Preds head coach John Hines on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And John, I want to ask you about Yakov Trenin. I mean, he's already obliterated his season high in goals. He's up to 10 now. I think his previous high was 5. And to me, he's always been a guy that maybe a little underrated with the skill that he brings to the table. He can score goals in different ways. Just what are you noticing, I guess, offensively out of Trenin so far this year?
Well, he's really playing to his strengths. He's a big, strong, fast player. He's got a good shot. He has some pretty good hands. But what we really like about him right now is he hasn't kind of veered off what gives him success. He can get up and get some speed on the rush, like wide speed, and take pucks to the net, which he's done. You know, he's not really going east-west or checking up and looking for, you know, different type of style offense. He's playing north-south game for him. His forecheck is relentless, so he turns a lot of pucks over. He's very good in the offensive zone where, you know, he's a hard player to defend and contain. And he's getting himself into scoring areas. He does a great job of playing down low in the offensive zone. He gets to the net front, so he has tip options. But he also gets into that grade A area, like inside the dots and around the net front area, where he's getting some really good quality scoring chances like he had against St. Louis. He's just sitting right off that back post and winds up scoring basically an empty net goal just by getting to that grade A area. So it's nice to see him have success. And as you said, he's clearly surpassed what he's done last year. But the consistency level in his game and playing to his identity, proud of him for that, because I think that, and that's why he's having success. And sometimes that changes for a young guy. And he's been very consistent in what he needs to do to be a real good player for us.
So what's the focus, John, with the Jets? You know, solid team. And Kyle Connor is a guy who's been a good player, you know, for several years this league, but really having a heck of a year this year. What are the key points against the Jets?
Well, I think for the Jets, we have to be, you know, some of the issues we've gone, you know, when you look at their team, you have Connor, Dubois, Kopp, Scheifele. You know, those guys can really skate. They're deadly off the rush, and they don't need a lot of chances. And I think if you look at the last few games, the type of chances we've given up and or goals have been like rush chances, odd man rushes, kind of easy looks for the other team. So we got to make sure that those things are buttoned up going into tonight's game. And then the other part is when we're, you know, we got to be hard on those guys. We got to be on top of Connor and physical on him and don't give him easy ice. Same thing with Scheifele. And, you know, we've got to make it a hard night for those guys. If they're going to get offensive looks, they've really got to work for them, as opposed to giving them to them or having systematic breakdowns that allow them to access their skill easily.
Well, John, we appreciate, as always, you taking time to join us this morning. Great information, as you always bring to the table. Very appreciative of that. And good luck tonight as you take on the Jets.
All right, guys. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Absolutely. You as well.
John
Hines, Preds head coach, our guest here on Robbie and Rexfield. We'll see if the Predators can get back in the win column tonight as they take on the Winnipeg Jets. When we come back, it is time for the best and worst things in sports for the week. We'll take your submissions on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the week, time for the best and worst things in sports for this week. We'll take your submissions, as we always do, on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rexrode, let's begin, as we always do, with your best and worst things in sports for this week.
Well, I hate to be obvious, but I'm going to go best thing. I'm going to go Derrick Henry in pads running around at a press conference yesterday. The sort of reality of Derrick Henry being back in a football field after breaking a bone in his foot, having surgery. I mean, in Nashville, what's a better thing than that?
Yeah.
Now we'll see next week. If the result of that goes into the best or worst category. But for now, the anticipation of Derrick Henry returning to the field, the work he put into rehab, and the excitement in this city to see him in a uniform again on game day is palpable.
He has not said that he's playing on Saturday, just to be clear.
That is true. That is very true.
Your worst thing in sports.
Yeah, so my worst thing is, you know, wild card – or super, I'm sorry, super wild card weekend. It stunk. It was not very good. You know, basically you had two games that came down to the end and you had four blowouts. But the worst thing was then how many people, and I know some were just being tongue in cheek, but I think some were actually being serious, were now comparing this to the college football playoff. You know, I saw so much of like, that, you know, again, some of it's sarcasm, but some of it like, oh, we got to do something different with this. Look, I mean, the seventh seed is here to stay, and maybe it'll prove over time that it's just too much. I think there are plenty of, I think there are teams on both conferences that would have given us better games. It's just how it worked out that we had to have the freaking Steelers and Eagles in the playoffs this year.
Here goes the show again.
Well, they stink. I mean, come on. They stink, and they gave us a stinky game. But this was an outlier. Let's never compare this to the college football playoff issues, which is they can't get competitive games at all. I mean, we're down to a Final Four on both sides right now, okay? And I promise you it's going to be awesome. I promise you this weekend is going to be awesome.
He will wash your car if it's not.
So let's chill out. That's right. If this weekend is not awesome, bring me your car.
Michelle Knezevic, your best and worst things in sports for the week.
Okay, so my best thing in sports this week, it also has to do with Wild Card Weekend. Can't speak this morning. Joe, you're not here, but I'm struggling this morning. The coffee is just not flowing.
Wait, you don't have coffee?
No, I do. It's just not hitting me as quick as I would like it to hit me.
She wants an IV.
I need an IV. My best in sports this week. So Jason and Travis Kelce's mom, I don't know if you guys saw this on Twitter, but it was awesome. So she went to the Bucks-Eagles game, supported Jason Kelce, and then she made it to the Chiefs-Steelers game and surprised Travis. So I just think that's awesome. I mean, think about it. This weekend, she's like, where am I? Like, where can I go? You know, right? Yeah. Both of her sons are playing, which is amazing. But yeah, pretty awesome. She got to see that. And then she surprised Travis Kelce in the press conference, which was pretty cool. He didn't know she was going to be there. And then I think asked him a question and he was like, what are you doing here? and then my worst in sports this week, Kentucky basketball legend, Joby Hall died. He was like a staple just in basketball in general, even if you're not a Kentucky fan. Just a legend and stuff. But yeah, I couldn't really find any other, you know, worse this week.
Well, that's probably good.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I guess, too, really quick, just like all the Flores being fired from the Dolphins, you know, he actually was turning around that program, and I thought he was doing a pretty good job. But yeah.
There you go.
That's my worst in sports.
The best things in sports for me. I have honorary best thing in sports. My honorary best thing in sports is the tears of Dallas Cowboy fans that we saw repeatedly on the broadcast. It was awesome. We'll get back to the Cowboys here in a second for my worst thing in sports, but some of the memes that were created on the broadcast along with Tony Romo's commentary behind it were pretty amazing between the Cowboys and the Niners. So that was some good stuff. I don't want to talk too much about it because my team is about to play the Niners and I could very well be in tears on Saturday night. We'll see how that goes. But it was pretty awesome to see some of those faces on the television broadcast. My real best thing in sports, Devontae Adams being just a fantastic human being. If you missed the video of, he got the kind of like the media guy award of the year for the Packers. It's the third time he's won it. Just his detailed response of why he feels it's important to do things the way that he does it with the media was pretty awesome to see. Matt Schneidman tweeted out that video a couple days ago. And also a story came out this week where somebody walked up to him in some diner in Green Bay and just kind of told him how awesome he thought he was. And Devontae Adams bought his entire family breakfast at the diner. So Devontae Adams, big good guy. Hoping he has a big game on Saturday night.
If I could have a wish, it would be his answer to that question. And I wouldn't have seen it. You retweeted Schneidman, so that's how I saw it. And if you could give his answer and play it for every single coach and athlete in professional sports, actually, that would be amazing because it's exactly – I mean, just, I love how he looks at it, and good for him. And one of it is beyond, like, the media stuff. It's like he was talking about his dad, like, okay, well, basically, are you going to half-ass something or are you going to actually – like, you're looking at the clock in school, it's going to be a long day. Yeah. Or do you want to actually, like, put something into it and get something out of it? I mean, it's a great life lesson that he sort of delivered there too.
Yep, so shout-out to Devontae Adams. He's a stud on the field, stud off the field. My worst thing in sports – Cowboys fans tossing beer at the refs. Now, look, I understand you're very emotional. A lot of things went on in that game. You're mad about the officials bumping into Dak Prescott. I understand all those things. If you're a Cowboys fan and you think the officials are the reason you lost that game, I got some news for you, my friend. It's Mike McCarthy. That's the reason you lost that game and some of the plays that your quarterback made or did not make in that game. So, Cowboys fans chucking beer at the refs. You know, there was this story out there that they were throwing beer at their own players. They were not. They were throwing beer at the refs running off the field. Stop throwing beer at people. Stop throwing beer on the field. That's our lesson we've learned this year.
You should be throwing diet soda at Mike McCarthy.
Jeez.
But, well, I'm just saying, you know, or pick a liquid, whatever. You know. Yeah. You know, I thought for a minute there, Robbie, you were going to do the Vol Twitter thing.
No, I'm not doing that. I saw after that happened, like everybody was like tagging David Uppin. They're like, what do you think about this, Uppin? What do you think about these Cowboys fans?
When are you going to write about this, Uppin? Actually, I feel bad for Uppin because it was actually like I was the one who was at the Tennessee Ole Miss game. I don't think he wrote about that.
I don't think
it
he did
was me.
How do you guys see this stuff?
Vol Twitter is everywhere.
Is it like a space? Is it a Twitter space?
No, well, I'm sure. Can you imagine a Vol Twitter space? I bet that's out there somewhere. Big Orange Mac leading the way.
Well, I know for me, I mean, basically, because last year I did a thing on Vol Twitter, which is how we got Big Orange Mac on the show. So I now follow all those Vol Twitterers. And although they're like reasonable, you know, almost for the most part, they're quite reasonable.
Somewhat tame.
But then, you know, if you follow some Vol Twitter people, then you're going to inevitably see more stuff from other Vol Twitterers. And there's some, you dig deep on that sucker. And it's quite a world, man. But yeah, they got really mad at Uppin. I think, wasn't there another bowl game too where people were throwing stuff? It was the Georgia fan.
Yeah,
it was Georgia. And again, it's like, when's the article? It's like, it's not the same thing. You know, all right, just come on. Just let's all move on. Can we all move forward from this?
Well, Cowboys fans keep throwing stuff. So every time it comes up, it's going to be on Vol Twitter.
I know. Every single time that a fan throws something now, there's going to be someone on Vol Twitter who tags somebody in the media. Where's the article on this?
40. There are so many people tagging Pat 40 the other day. It was amazing.
The 40 Wolken Thamel triangle of death.
Shout out to Thamel, by the way, going to ESPN. I guess big move for him.
Yeah, I texted him to come on the show, and he's blowing me off. He's Mr. Big Time now.
Wow.
So. Now I get to call him out.
This has been the best and worst things in sports. We do this every Thursday morning at 7:45 here on the program. Make sure you join 102.5 The Game this Saturday for a special playoff edition of Nashville's Best NFL Pregame Show, live from Boom Boss, Crab Pizza, and Tap House in East Nashville. The NFL Pregame Show features Jared Stillman, Mark Howard, and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. You can join them from 1 to 3 live at Boom Boss, Crab Pizza, and Tap House at 1003 Russell Street prior to the Titans taking on the Cincinnati Bengals. The NFL Pregame Show brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. When we come back, speaking of the Titans, we'll get Stephen Holder's thoughts from The Athletic on the Titans and the Bengals and what in the world's going on right now in Indianapolis. We'll get to all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.